It's time for America's most unique motorsport show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill, Kirk Elliott, hanging out in the house with us here at RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. Today's show is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. And we got a lot to talk about today, folks. I think we probably need to start, Austin, I think we probably should start with Knoxville. Would you agree with me on that one? Talk about Knoxville. Talk about Rico picking up the win up there. What did you think about that race the other night?
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a really good race. I was glad to see Rico finally, you know, get a win. He's been really fast here the past couple weeks, and it's
really
just never worked out for him. He broke at I-70, and then, you know, he was fast at Lake Ozark, but just, you know, couldn't put much together. And it was just good to finally see him get a win. I'll be honest with you, I was really pulling for Kerry Madsen to win. He's had some good runs with the Rolf car this year, but
yeah,
ever since they put that Toyota in, he's struggled more than he's had good runs.
How many weeks have they had that Toyota in there?
I think all year.
Did they take the Toyota deal away from Reitzel and give it to them, the 83 car?
Yeah, when we talked to Aaron, you know, a while ago on the show, he mentioned that he left the Toyota program, and when he went to the Richardson team, that program wasn't going to really work with how their team was set up, and it just wouldn't fit their program. So Toyota took that program and moved it to the Roth Motorsports team, and you know, I think the only one that has it is Kerry. So, you know, there's a couple of guys that, you know, have them and just some one-off cars. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's had that engine pretty much all year long.
Yeah. Do you think Rico almost gave that race away there on the last lap, didn't he? I mean, it was very close.
Yeah, he just lap traffic was just really tough for some reason Saturday night. And I don't know if it was just because of the curb being the way it was, or I was surprised more than anything else how slick Knoxville was. Normally Knoxville, it's slick, but you can still run through the middle and have some grip, and you couldn't do that. That was almost near impossible. And
right,
you know, Rico, I've noticed Rico, you know, bail off the cushion off of four and run through the middle, you know, more in the past two nights than I've seen him ever do it. You saw it really at I-70, and we saw it at Knoxville. And you know, it works early on when the track's really dirty, but when it gets cleaned off, you got to move away from it. And I think that's, you know, one thing Rico could probably learn from, you know, watching some film and replays of the races, and know when to do it and when not to do it. And I think if he would kind of, you know, stray away from that, he might not have had a, you know, Kerry Madsen charge on the last lap.
Right. Rico, really, he showed his stuff early in the race, but he didn't take the lead until four laps to go from the end, right?
Right.
I think it was four laps to go from the end, if I remember right, if I remember the call of the race right. So let me ask you this. Is Rico fast enough to win the Knoxville Nationals?
You could say that.
I think
look, his crew chief's won it a handful of times. You definitely can't count Rico out. You know, Rico's getting better on half miles, and I was kind of surprised to see that was his fourth Knoxville win, but it makes sense. You know, he hasn't been there very long, and you know, he's been there 11, 12 years, and it's just starting to finally click for him and pay off. And, you know, you have, you know, Rick Warner on the wrenches, and the guy's been around Knoxville, you know, forever, and he's, you know, won a lot of races there. So, yeah, that's just a combination that's just going to be set up for success here, just a matter of time.
Were you a little caught off guard by the lack of performance by Macri and Buddy Kofoid? That neither one of them made the A-main. Were you a little caught off guard? I was, because, you know, you automatically think that Macri's going to make the show, right? And I was just shocked that he ran 13th in that B. I think that's where he ran.
Yeah, it's just Knoxville. I've said it many times before. Knoxville is a different animal. That's just it's just a different animal. That's all you can say about it. You know,
but those
you
guys
might,
have experience up there, though.
They do, but you know, it's just really tough. There's a lot of good competition up there, and you know, a lot of guys that have a lot of laps. You know, you can go to I-70 and get away with not having a lot of laps there, and you know, where maybe some other guys don't, and get away with it. But Knoxville, everybody has a lot of laps there, mm-hmm. or the guys that are fast do, and to beat those guys, you gotta have the experience and you know how to get qualified in, and that's just the biggest thing. And you know,
right.
You know, we saw it with Ryan Timms. I mean, kids, you know, lit the sprint car world on fire and goes up there and can't make the show and really struggled in the B main. And mm-hmm. it's just, it, you know, even the best of them can just, you know, fall victim to Knoxville.
Buddy started 15th. He ran 7th, or 6th, I should say. And Anthony Macri started 12th, and he ran 13th. You know, from watching Macri out at I-70 Speedway, I thought he was going to be really strong up there at Knoxville. And for whatever reason, I didn't see it the other night. I don't know if that's just a lack of laps running. How many times has Macri run Knoxville? Do we know
made,
this?
He made the Nationals A main there last year, so he ran the Nationals. And then, he came up here for the two-day show in June.
Right.
I'm not sure if he came before the Nationals last year and ran, but there's right there, that's 4 nights he's had, not including last Saturday night. Including Saturday night would be five race nights there.
Right. Marie, she says maybe that the 26 has more than a driver problem. Corey did a nice job in the IndyCar sprinter.
You know what the problem is there?
What's that?
Someone's missing their crew chief.
That's true.
You know, what did Zeb Wise have at Wise Pretty Racing that he doesn't have now at Rudine Racing? Wayne Pretty. And it's showing.
So Wayne Pretty didn't go with
no
over there with him to the 26 car?
Nope, he did not. I found that out last night.
I did not know that.
No. No, I was really surprised that he didn't go, but
Wayne Pretty is a past Lucas Oil ASCS National Crew Chief of the Year. He's a high-end, high-quality crew chief. Why wouldn't they not take him over there with him? Why would they mess with the chemistry? Because, as you mentioned, Zeb has been really fast ever since Wayne and him got together, right? Haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Why would you mess with that?
From what I understand is Rudine Racing had ties in with a crew chief. He's worked his way up through the program.
Yeah.
I believe he started off as a tire guy, then came to a car chief and now into the crew chief role, and they don't want to let him go. They're you know, invested in him and you know, that's fine, but he's shown multiple times now that he needs more experience or, you know, guidance from a crew chief to get good. And yeah, I'm not sure why they, you know, maybe wouldn't offer a job up to Wayne to get him to come over there, but
at least to be a correspondent or somebody to talk to Zeb, because I think the chemistry between Zeb and Wayne Pretty was really good, right?
And
we've only seen that 26 car fast one night with Zeb in it, haven't we? What was that? What race was that that we saw?
He was pretty decent at the lake last weekend,
right?
Or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
that was yeah. And then yeah, that's about the only time I've seen Zeb any good. I'm not really sure. Well, he was pretty good at Skagit. I'm not really sure, you know, if Wayne was there for that race or not. Because at that point, he wasn't. He was still driving for Wise Pretty. He wasn't mm-hmm. driving for Rudine at that point. So, I mean, I don't really think he went up there. But besides that, yeah, they've only had really one good race, Skagit, and then you add in the lake. And besides that, they have really struggled and haven't performed well at all. And
right.
And to do that at you know, Kevin Rudine's, you know, son's or foundation / memorial races, that's just not.
Yeah.
That you just look away and just shake your
sense.
Head.
No. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Tammy, and we love you, Tammy. Thanks for being such a great supporter of the show every day. She said this is Macri's third year running the Nationals.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, that's kind of disturbing. First of all, in the 10 car, when Wayne and Zeb were together, they were fast every night, weren't they?
Pretty much.
Every night they were fast, just about. I mean, with the exception of you have an off night once in a while, right? I just don't understand why they would break up that chemistry. I just don't get it. And I don't understand why they would keep a crew chief that has no chemistry at all with Zeb. I mean, I don't know how the relationship is between the crew chief that they have now with the 26 car and Zeb. I don't know if there's a relationship there or not. But we do know that there's a great relationship between Wayne Purdy and Zeb Weiss, and they should have just kept that together. So I'm floored by that.
Yeah, unless, you know, the overall plan was to, you know, try and get, you know, Zeb to a full-time ride out of, you know, the Weiss-Purdy camp and get him there and let him take his career where he wants to take it and let it just kind of run its course and you know, Wayne and Zeb's dad just take a step back and let him go do his own thing. Maybe that was the original plan. I'm not sure, but yeah, I just after looking at the performance now, if I was Kevin Rudine, I would be like, all right, what do we need to do to get what do we need to do to get better?
First of all, it's not like the Rudines couldn't afford to bring Wayne Purdy over there.
No,
right?
There's not a lot.
There's
that they
plenty
can't
of money
afford.
There to bring on another crew member,
right?
I would say. Wow. How about Donnie Schatz picking up his second win with the World of Outlaws this year? Last night at Weedsport Speedway in New York, what'd you think of that race? That was a pretty good race, wasn't it?
Yeah, Weedsport's a very unique track. It's
D-shaped, isn't it?
It's D-shaped, so it's, I mean, central New York. What's up there? Big blocks. It's all a big block. It's big block country, so we saw a really slick and smooth track to a little bit of a cushion, and really, you know, when we see that, we see rubber. And I know Johnny Gibson in the Super Dirt Car Series announcer was kind of talking about this before the, you know, the races got going last night, that, you know, it gets really slick up there, but it really doesn't lay rubber. So, you know, we can get them really, the track gets really slick and really racy without, you know, the concern of taking rubber and all that. And I think that's, yeah, I wish all tracks were like that, but yeah, I feel like it was a really good race overall.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what happened to Hod last night. Yeah, I didn't see the whole helmet incident, but you did. Do we have that queued up?
Yeah, you just got to give me a second here.
All right, we'll get that queued up, and I guess not too happy with the flagman last night. I guess that was the case, and he threw his helmet out onto the racetrack, brought out the yellow. They were being a little tight-lipped on the broadcast last night with that, I think, weren't they? Did you notice? Did they show much of that incident at all?
I didn't get to watch the broadcast on Saturday night when that happened. I got to see, you know, fan video and different videos around the track, but I'm not sure what was said over the PA and what Johnny Gibson's reaction was to the incident.
Yeah. All right, so do you have that all queued up?
Yep, here we go.
Here we go. All right. Let's take a look at this. Not happy, waving his arms. He's taking off his helmet.
Is that
an official right there?
Yeah, he's been arguing with the official here.
Well, first of all, there should be a fine right there, right? Now he's talking to the official. How far was his car off the racetrack? Was it far enough off the racetrack?
It wasn't very far. It was barely behind the NOS Energy Drink banner, which probably was 6 feet off the track, 8 feet off the track.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the car maybe from the front bumper to the track, probably 12, 15 feet. Not a lot.
Wow. And he is visibly upset at this point. And I haven't seen the helmet chuck yet.
No, it's coming. It's just coming. Give a second.
This is something that I would do. There it is. He threw the helmet right out on the racetrack, and that brings out the yellow. Wow. Do you agree with what his issue with the flagman? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I have to. It just, you know, if he was spun through the infield, then that would be one thing. All right, if you're way out of the way, then all right, I guess you could let the field race. But he wasn't that far off the track. And at the entry of the corner, you never know what can happen. So,
right.
You know, definitely not. He was in a pretty vulnerable spot of getting hit if something went wrong. And that was, I mean, it was a wreck right in front of pretty much the field. So, yeah, I felt like he deserved a yellow. And we saw, you know, a couple of examples of throwing yellows for unnecessary reasons would be like Ozark with the All-Stars last week. Enrico Abreu got free off of two. Jumped over a tractor tire, pushed the tire 5 foot in the infield, and kept going. Yes, it kind of broke his momentum, mm-hmm. but he rejoined and merged and kept on racing for into 3 and 4. They threw a yellow for that. So if they're going to throw a yellow for a guy getting over top of a tractor tire, why aren't we going to throw a yellow for a right. guy sitting, 15 foot off the edge of the track that spun, you know, across the front stretch? I mean, it doesn't make sense. And, yeah, it's just a poor call. I've seen posts that the flagman was a super dirt car series flagman, and has been known for situations like that. I would be surprised that the flagman would make that call. I would assume it would be race director or race control that would throw the yellow. So, I mean, blame both of them. You know, we've seen a guy at US 36 turn the red lights on and off again.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just. I don't know why, but more this year we've seen, you know, issues with flagmans and lights and calling cautions or red. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with them. Maybe you don't react that way. Maybe you just don't show up or whatever. So I don't know.
No, you can't do that.
I mean, if you're that visibly upset with them, I don't know.
You're fourth in the points. You're 100. You're 100.
Yeah, but they took more
points out of the
they took
right
more
now.
Points away from them.
How many points did they take away from him on that?
Well, he didn't finish the race. So he went from maybe, you know, getting, you know, a decent amount of points on
Brad's. He's 130 suite. Out right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he was less than probably, I think, 60, 70 before the race. I'll have to go back and look. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you just screwed a regular with the series. And if, you know, we go down, you know, a month and down the road and something like that happens again and a yellow comes out, they're not going to be happy campers.
Did you hear the flagger last? Hold on a second. I'm glad that you brought this up, Pete. I'm glad that you brought this up. Did you hear the flagger last night ask Donnie Schatz if the flagger letting him know gravel was close to helping Donnie? Listen, the flagger was standing there. The mic was open, and you could hear the flagman, I don't know if he was the flagman or an official, but he said to Donnie, could you tell how far of a lead you had by the information I was giving you?
Wow.
I'm just saying it. I heard it last night, Pete, and my jaw hit the ground when I heard a World of Outlaw official ask Donnie Schatz if he could tell by his signals how big a lead he had. Now, why would any World of Outlaw official say that?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't. Wow.
You need to, if you can cue it up, I want you to cue it up right when he gets to Victory Lane, and you can hear the official ask him if he could tell how big a lead he had by the signals that he was giving him. Pete, I'm glad you brought that up because I heard that last night as well. I couldn't believe my ears when I heard that. It was unbelievable. I don't know if anybody else heard that or not. That's what Pete says. He says, how did the flagger signal Donnie that the second place was close? I don't know how he did it. I'm glad somebody else heard that as well, because I heard that and I couldn't believe it when I heard it last night. And we're going to try to find it so we can listen to it, where the official comes up to Donnie and tells him, could you tell how big a lead you had by the signals I was giving you? When I heard that, I thought to myself, that official needs to be fired. Why would any World of Outlaw official be giving signals to a driver on the racetrack? Did not understand that at all. And Pete, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had that in my notes and I just couldn't believe it. I have it right here. It says the World of Outlaw official asked if he helped him out with the lead he had. And again, I don't know if it was the flagman or not.
Are you ready to listen to it?
Yeah. All right. Hold on. Can you got the audio turned up? All right.
A
here.
Clean sweep
listen.
Of the night.
Donnie, hell of a job, man. Did I help you in the least bit to let you know he was there at the end? No. Hey, nice job.
Roll that back again, Austin. I want people to hear that twice.
Shots with a clean sweep of the night.
Turn it up a little.
Donnie, hell of a job, man. Did I help you in the least bit to let you know he was there at the end? No. Hey, nice job.
Can you tell Donnie Shots didn't want to answer that question? Could you see that on his face? Like, you're not saying that. I hope there's not a live mic open somewhere.
Wow.
Is that unbelievable? Can anybody justify a World of Outlaw official saying that, hey, could you tell how far he was back on you by my signals that I was giving you? Can anybody else defend that guy for doing that? What do you think, Austin, after hearing that? What do you think? That's not good, is it?
No, that's not good at all. I don't know what to tell you. I'm just laughing now. You don't ever see that. I don't know. Wow.
Why would any World of Outlaw official be giving signals to a driver out on the racetrack? If you work for the series, that's the last thing that you want to do, is give people signals out on the racetrack if you're a World of Outlaws official. You agree?
I agree. I mean, get your crew guys to give you signal sticks. Come on. I mean, not that Donnie asked him to do it at all. I don't know what to say. What's going on with the Outlaw officials now? We got one guy that's trying to fight the crew members on the side-by-side. We got a potential flagman.
I'm gonna give that guy a break, because I think he was intimidated into that.
Maybe. Oh, intimidated, okay.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't just totally shove Sheldon into the wall as he was trying to get back into the work area, and or knock his nose wing over.
I guess.
That's that. Okay, we'll forget about that. But,
I guess, that part.
Yeah.
You had to remind me of some of
I
that.
I did.
Austin.
Yeah, so we're gonna as an official, you shouldn't, you can, I get it. It's a tough job. Mm. No reason to tackle a guy. That's a quick way to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
I think that guy might be a son of a higher up, so he might not get fired, but he should be.
He was an older guy.
Yeah. And then if we're going to have a fish or potential flagmans, corner workers,
mm-hmm.
an official giving Donnie shot signals. I mean, that's...
It's not good.
World of Outlaws, what are you guys doing? Falling apart on me.
I gotta believe that they're aware of that situation.
Oh yes, they are.
And they're gonna have to talk to that official about that. Should the official be relieved of his duties over that?
Yeah, you're altering the outcome of our race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. World of Outlaws is starting to look like WWE. Rick says.
I hate to say it, but, I mean, you got a point.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, let's take a break. Lee Spencer's going to join us next here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Lee Spencer next, right here in the on the phone with us from North Carolina next on Mostly Motorsports.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9-hole whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back. It's Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. I want to remind everybody about the great track tribute that's going on right now up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. I was up there this weekend, folks. Unbelievable. The display for the cars that they have up there. The memorabilia that they have up there, the videos, the driver uniforms, the helmets, the T-shirts. A lot of great things going on up there at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum right now with this great tribute to Ascot Park. You need to get up there and see it, folks. It is unbelievable. You will enjoy it tremendously. I guarantee it. So, and while you're there, you need to buy you a raffle ticket for the 2022 XXX Chassis 410 Sprint Car that they're going to be giving away. They'll be doing that on Friday, December 16th. And if you can't make it up to Knoxville, to the racetrack, or to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always do it online at SprintCarRaffle.com. That's SprintCarRaffle.com. They're going to give you an extra $25,000 to help you pay for the taxes on that as well. And then while you're there, I don't know if you were up there this weekend for the All-Stars, but did you see the Corvette? Did you see the Corvette that they're giving away on the raffle up there? It's a 2022 IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. They'll be giving that away on Saturday, August 13th, during the Knoxville Nationals. Again, folks, this is only one of 1,000 cars that are built like this. This is a real race car. This is not your standard Corvette. This is an IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. They're going to be giving that away on Saturday, August 13th, during the Knoxville Nationals. I saw one of these cars online for sale for $150,000. And they just sold one on Barrett Jackson for $300,000. They're going to give you $25,000 to help you with the taxes on that as well. Don't forget, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, folks. 7 days a week. So get up there and visit the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. It's a great venue. It's so cool. It's one of the great motorsports venues in all of America. And when you're up there, if you run into Bob Baker, make sure you tell him the Racing Boys sent you up there. All right, let's bring on Lee Spencer. She joins us now on the show. Lee, how are you doing?
I'm delightful. How are you, gentlemen?
Gentlemen, it's just me. I'm flying solo today. Well, Austin's here with me. Hey, how would you like to win that Corvette up there at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum? Wouldn't you like to win that?
Oh, I'd love to win that. I mean, I even have a garage for it now, which would be absolutely dandy.
right.
But, yeah, I'm just... I don't know. I don't know what I would do with it, just other than, you know, sport around. I mean, it would be good for going back and forth to the Y, I guess.
Yeah, you would drive it, right? Wouldn't you drive it once in a while?
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't had a sports car for about a decade, but I could learn to love it again.
Lee, I hate to take you down this road. But
what road are we going down?
We're going to go down the road of Indy.
Okay.
I'm
like
just
the road course. You hate to take me down the road course road.
Right. I hate to take you down the road course road, but they just need to give up on Indy. I'm just saying it. They just need to give up on it. There's nobody there.
Well, before you give up on it, though, let's try the new car on Indy before you give up on it, right? And if the new car doesn't work at on the oval, let's go to IRP. I mean, I don't think we need to walk away completely from Indianapolis, but I think that, you read my column, so you know that
right.
What the drivers had to say, and with the exception of Reddick and Chase Briscoe, who is an Indiana native, and he's just, you know, growing up in Indiana
right.
and just knowing the prestige of the track, and anybody who grew up in the Midwest has that same love for that track, right? I mean, you grew
right.
up in the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that was the mecca of all motorsports to us. If you're a dirt guy, then it's probably Knoxville, but
right.
you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
IndyCar was so sexy in the 60s when I first had, you know, just an inkling of racing. And I always thought that seeing the cars there was just an amazing thing. And when they made the announcement that NASCAR was going to the Brickyard, I couldn't have been happier because there wasn't a lot of racing in the Midwest for
right.
stock cars at that time. I thought it was just going to be the absolute coolest. Before the pandemic, I think I'd missed maybe one, two races in all that time. And, you know, you go back to 2008 with the tire debacle, and ever since then they've really just been fighting to justify being there, because right. It's just been one, you know, that just the fans that day, there are people that would just refuse to ever come back.
Right.
So we have fought that stigma ever since then. And I thought, you know, especially with what was going on in the pandemic, this just seemed like a good alternative. You know, throw the road course out there. Let's see how it works. It was okay last year. This year, you know, and not to take anything away from Tyler Reddick, because I think he did a masterful job. Started on the pole, held off, you know, challenges from top people. I mean, I can't imagine even, you know, having the confidence that he has after winning the road course. But looking right. in your rearview mirror, your side mirrors, and seeing Chase Elliott, seeing AJ Allmendinger, seeing Ross Chastain, these guys gunning for you, you know, there's probably a little shrinkage involved, right? But at the end of the day, he persevered and, you know, watched everybody pile up behind him in turn one.
Right, yeah.
You know, if Rock'em Sock'em Robots is your style of racing, I'm sure you're entertained. I mean, you know, you've heard, for years, you've heard the comparisons to WWE, you know, maybe not in the same way as where I'm going with this, but, you know, slam, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
You know, you go 4 or 5 wide into turn one and it's going to hit the fan. And it did. And but it wasn't, I don't think it's NASCAR's finest moment. And if you're going to sit there and you say, we have the best race car drivers in the world, and then you do stupid crap like that, then, you know, I'm going to use Kevin Harvick's word. It's embarrassing. And
yeah.
That's just, you know, kind of – and I love road course racing. You guys know that.
Sure.
I absolutely love it because it provides organic side-by-side racing. But, you know, what we saw on Sunday just wasn't – just not my cup of tea.
It's just not a good road course.
It's not a good look for the sport.
No. No.
I mean, F1 race there, right? But, I mean, you know, these guys, that's what they do. They run road courses. And even F1, I guarantee you that there are people who turn on Formula 1, wait for that first turn to see what's going to happen, then turn it off until the very end.
Right.
You know, usually in this era, you know, usually that means Verstappen's 5 seconds ahead of the field. But,
you know, right.
It's you know, they have their moments when someone else might pop to the forefront. And I will say that I'm not surprised that Vettel's retiring, but I got to interview him after his rookie year with Red Bull, and you know, just to watch him over the years, I'm kind of sad to see him go, and I hope he finds something that brings him a ton of joy, because I've really enjoyed watching Sebastian Vettel over the years.
Right. You know, it was 3 or 4 years ago, I looked up the average pass for the lead in Formula One was 1.2.
And usually it happens in the first turn, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, listen, I do believe that the Formula One reality show that they have is drawing people into Formula One.
Oh, that's fabulous. On Netflix?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to watch it. Give me your take on that show after watching it.
Oh, it's spectacular. And I think that show has elevated the popularity. I won't say I think. I know that show. The Netflix show has elevated the popularity of Formula One in the U.S. Exponentially. You know, we think of it being more international now. Daniel, help me out, Reed. You speak Russian, Kvyat. He was in a car this weekend in the Cup Series, and I said, you know, what are your countrymen think about stock car racing, you know, or is it even on their radar? And he said he thought it was increasing in popularity, and he expects to run Watkins Glen with Kimi Raikkonen. And so people are going to come out to see this because they're familiar with these guys from the Netflix series,
right,
in addition to just your hardcore fans. But, you know, they're going to be on a traditional road course, which is Watkins Glen. And so I think it'll be a little bit different. I mean, Reed's first race, I mean, even though Reed grew up, my husband Reed grew up in the South, his first race that he ever saw was the Formula One race at Watkins Glen. Mm. So it just, you know, it just kind of shows you, you know, just the staying power of that course. And it's a place in history where you talk about American motorsports. And, right. you know, to think Formula One once raced there. I mean, hell, Reed and I were talking this morning, Formula One, when Bernie Ecclestone decided to bring Formula One to Indianapolis, that was the transformation of that racetrack. I mean, I remember the hole-in-the-wall media center that we had before Formula One came to town, and we got a media center that rivals no media center I've ever seen in my lifetime. I mean, wow. Maybe at, you know, some other places in the world, but Indianapolis built a state-of-the-art media center at the time, and it was just absolutely amazing. And, you know, some of the I think after that and after people saw that, they went to renovate some of the NASCAR tracks a little bit and at least bring it up to, you know, up to speed. But, yeah. Man, they did so much to that racetrack to prepare for that. And, you know, they just set a standard. And so it's, you know, it's kind of interesting to watch. But I would have liked to have seen what it looked like to race on that road course with the Formula One cars. But, you know, you put those big stock cars out on that track, and it's just crazy town.
Yeah. Man, that was a scary deal yesterday between Kyle Larson and Ty Dillon, wasn't it?
Oh, it was nuts. And, you know, apparently Bob Pockers did some digging, and they said it was not Larson's brakes that failed. And that kind of surprised because, you know, it looked like he locked it up.
Right.
Was it Bell that locked it? I think Bell locked it. You know, he had locked it up at one point and blew the tire. There was the brakes really played an integral part in yesterday's race. And the people I talked to after the event, you know, basically said that RCR has really perfected their brake package. And their quotes from Reddick's crew chief Randall Burnett on that point. And, you know, for the dirt crowd who's out there, if you don't know who Randall is, other than Reddick's crew chief, his brother and sister-in-law run Millbridge. And so that's a little kind of dirt connection. Randall's from St. Louis. They moved down to North Carolina to, you know, see what try to get in a bigger motorsports forum, and that's what they all ended up doing. Randall went the way of a crew chief, and his brother opened up Millbridge.
Did we ever hear what the problem was with the five car then? Do we know exactly what the problem was with it? Why he went in there so fast and wasn't able to stop and just smashed Ty Dillon? Do we know what the reason was?
I don't know that Bob put up anything other than brakes. The Chevrolet rep who was there yesterday didn't bother going to the infield care center and interviewing Kyle Larson, nor did TV interview Kyle Larson after he came out of the infield care center. So
Larson didn't want to do an interview afterwards. He declined the interview after he came out of the infield care center. That's what they said on television.
Gotcha. Well, not the way I'd want to spend my 30th birthday, you know, having a hit like that. But, you know, he'll be back at the BC 39 this week. So no slowing down for that kid, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Did you get a chance to watch any sprint car racing this weekend? Did you watch Rico win at Knoxville?
Unfortunately, I did not, and I was so bummed when I saw that he won. We got back really late. I did watch the sprint car races all week and saw Justin Grant won the title. I saw Gravel win on Saturday, and then Donnie win on Sunday. I'm so glad Donnie finally got his second win because I really thought he had it the first night, and then Gravel just, you know, lit it up. But yeah, it was a busy week for dirt, and I think a good week all the way around. But sprint car racing entertained us all week, and that was awesome. I am not going to be at the BC 39 because it doesn't start for, you know, till Wednesday, and I've got to get my house loaded up. But it's You know, I hate that I'm missing that. Talked to Briscoe yesterday after the race. He's got three cars. Dylan Welch is going to drive for Briscoe, so I thought that was a pretty cool deal.
Cool.
Bell's not running it, which I found surprising. And Keith Coons, I sent you guys a clip from Keith Coons, a little preview on that, and he said he's running nine cars. So, and he concurs with you. He said that Ryan Timms is the most talented driver he's seen since Larson and Bell, so you guys are on the same page with that.
Well, just so you know, Ryan Timms, it didn't really have much of a showing in his 360 this weekend at Knoxville.
Well, but, you know, you put him in a midget, I think that he'll do okay, won't he? I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just relying on what you've told me in the past. I mean, you're my little, my dirt scout, so I have to rely on Scott the scout to tell me what the, you know, who I need to, you know, keep an eye on. And,
right.
You know, it was that, I mean, you know, at least now he's got his rookie stripe off, right?
Yeah.
How
no,
old?
No. 15. It was
how old is he?
15.
15. Right. He's going up against grown-ass right. men. So
right. That's true.
He's got time. Does he not?
Maybe we should give him a little bit of a break.
Well, I mean, you are the one. I mean, you were the one. Weren't you the one telling me that he was the, you know, hottest thing coming along since Larson? So you and Keith were on the same page, right?
Yeah. No, I think he's got tons of talent. He just didn't have a good weekend this weekend at Knoxville in the 360. But
he's going up against some big names, though, was he not?
Yeah. Well, and it was his first time there too.
Right.
Yeah. So we got to give him a little bit of a break. But he did win up at Husetts last night. Did you see that?
I did not see that. I wish I would have known that. I would have watched that, too. We came back, like I said, watched World of Outlaws. And actually, we watched World of Outlaws at the track and then came back. But we were like, I had three things going on yesterday, which was absolutely nuts. So, at the you know, I was just thrilled to get back to the hotel in one piece.
Well, that's a bummer you're not going to be going to the BC39, because I thought we'd have a correspondent down there.
Wow. I wish I had a sponsor for that race. I'd probably go back, but anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
yep.
You know, old racing boys, we're pumping the brakes on money right now.
Well, I don't think the travel budget for anyone is what it used to be, honestly. So
No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I once I moved in and my time frees up, it's a 3-hour drive to Indy. So, I mean, I will be back with a vengeance once I'm settled in St. Louis.
Hey, what do you think the attendance was yesterday at Indy?
I heard 60,000, which is about what it was the last time they ran the Oval. So, and, you know, like I said, let's give it a shot. I mean, and I hate to say this because, you know, I know there's a lot on the line. I know IndyCar's running with NASCAR. You know, it's cool to get everybody in one place, maybe win some fans over from the IndyCar side. Maybe, you know, IndyCar will win over some NASCAR fans. I mean, I think that a lot of people, especially during the pandemic when there wasn't a lot of entertainment and motorsports was going on, you got a whole bunch of new fans
right.
That came out of the woodwork. And they, you know, because they didn't have a lot to watch, so it got, you know, racing was intriguing. But it's, I'm kind of thinking that if you actually just tested the car, had the opportunity to run the new car on the Oval, after what we've seen at places like Atlanta and Pocono, I'm very curious to see what we have at this weekend at Michigan. But if, you know, between those tracks, if we see that this car can be competitive, and I think it will be, then I think you have to look long and hard at bringing back the Oval and just trying it. Then, it, you know, if it's just not compelling racing, then let's just move on. But like I said earlier, just give it a shot before you hang it up, because there's just something special when you come through the tunnel at Indy. You know, you just kind of feel all the racing ghosts of the past, and there's not another place that has that kind of history.
Right. If you want to check out Lee's work, she's got a couple great columns up on Racing Boys right now after Bedlam at Brickyard Road Course. Drivers prefer to return to the oval. She's also got a column up there about Tyler Reddick's triumph in overtime at Indy. So a lot of good stuff there on the Racing Scoop page on RacingBoys.com.
Two last things real quick.
Yep.
What I really found interesting in the scrums all day Saturday was, and I wrote about this on Saturday, was Kevin Harvick coming to Kyle Busch's defense, saying he'd like to have him as a teammate over at Stewart Haas Racing. That was Kevin with his manager's hat on, and I think it really spoke volumes to the respect that he has, and just, you know, speaking of Kyle Busch's talent and how just having him on the roster would elevate any organization. I thought that was really, really cool. I also asked Kyle flat out, because it didn't seem anybody had the gumption to do it at Pocono, is this all about money? Because, you know, the rumor was he was pulling down $12 million and Gibbs offered him half of that. You know, it just depends on who you talk to. You know, how close those numbers are, but that's what we were hearing. So, he said it's not, and he also said that, you know, having the truck team's a blessing and a curse. I thought it would be a bargaining chip with him, with Toyota, because they are the premier truck series, or the premier truck organization in the truck series.
Yep.
And, you know, also talk to people over at Stewart Haas Racing who, you know, basically said that, we'd love to have Kyle. We just don't know what to do with the truck team. So,
right.
You know, there's probably a little smoke to that fire. Not sure where it might go, but it's something to keep an eye on. And finally, I was fortunate to be on pit road yesterday when Tyler Reddick's wife and son were out there watching him do the burnout. I captured the video on Facebook, so it's a cute little, if you have a minute, just, you know, it's cute to see his son Bo running across and giving daddy a big hug right there at the start finish line at the Brickyard.
Kyle Busch said he would take a pay cut, though. Didn't he say that?
He did. He did say that. And, you know, in the course of, I would say, the last 10 years, you know, we had a little correction in the economy maybe 10, 15 years ago. I remember having this same conversation with Kevin Harvick, with Jeff Gordon, saying that they knew what was best for their organizations was to, you know, scale back on the pay. And, you know, back then those guys were pulling down, what, $50 million? I mean, they had $30 million sponsorships. They had all the money coming in from merchandise. Those days are long gone. You show me a $30 million sponsor. I mean, you guys remember when Tony Stewart went into business with Gene Haas that first year. He had Old Spice and what was the other one? Old Spice and Mobile. Well, no, it wasn't Mobile. It was another red and white
Office Depot.
Yeah.
For those 36 races, I don't know what the breakdown was, but he was getting $1 million per race from those two sponsors. And you're never going to – those days are gone
right.
Forever.
Yeah.
And when that started, you know, when we saw the corrections happening – you know, Jeff Gordon and Kevin Harvick were both very vocal about the fact that they had to take a pay cut. And we're probably in a worse situation now than we were then. And so with all these kids coming in and not even sniffing that kind of money to get going in NASCAR, you know, Kyle Busch, he's one of the few guys left in the sport that still has his own plane. Denny has his own plane. Chase has his own plane. You know, it's like, but that number is just minuscule compared to what it used to be, where guys had car, you know, planes and helicopters like they, you
right.
and I have cars and bicycles.
Yeah, yeah.
But it, you know, we live in a different world now, and so yes, he, you know, he said that he understands what's going on, and but we'll see what happens. I did find it unusual that when the race started yesterday and they were doing the flyover and the anthem and the Pledge of Allegiance, Joe Gibbs was standing right there next to the 18 car. So they were not standing together, but Joe was standing at the car. So, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Well, and as you mentioned, drivers used to make $12, $13 million a year. Now teams want to pay these drivers $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 a year because these young guys are so...
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Busch,
Kyle's in a little different, you know, category because he's the only driver in the sport, active driver, with two championships, right? But on the other side of that, you guys have heard the debates and talk radio as much as I have. You know, how many good years does he have left? And if you can sign a Ty Gibbs type to come in as a, you know, for a fraction of what it would cost to put Kyle Busch back in a car, again, you have a driver who's going to be sponsor friendly. It's, you know, it changes the dynamic.
Yeah. Lee, we appreciate you coming on the show as usual every Monday. We appreciate it on Saturdays as well. I guess so. You're just in moving mode right now, right? You're moving back to the Show Me State.
Well, actually, I'm moving back to Illinois, but
Illinois,
it's in the St. Louis metro area. So,
yeah. Are you looking forward to Are you looking forward to getting back to the Midwest?
Oh, absolutely. I've missed it. It's, you know, it's been way too long, and I'm just, you know, ready to get back to my old stomping grounds. And, you know, the other thing, I mean, how many racetracks can I get to in a matter of 4 hours
right
in that neck of the woods compared to being in North Carolina? I mean, other than Millbridge, everything's a haul. And so I think I'll be much better suited to cover the dirt side of the equation as well.
How's your sister doing?
I don't know.
Oh.
I've not spoken to her lately, so.
Oh, okay. All right.
We'll find out.
Okay. Well, Lee, thanks so much for taking the time. Join us on the show. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you on Saturday, okay?
Take care, guys.
All right. There you have it. Lee Spencer joining us here on the show. 60,000 people, they said, was there yesterday. It looked like 500. But I guess that's when you got a grandstands at Holt. Did you look that up, Austin? How many seats are at the Indy?
From the source that I found, 250,000 permanent seats.
Permanent seats. That doesn't include the infield and all the people that watch the race from the infield as well.
I could guess there could probably...
About 400,000.
Yeah. That's for the 500, I bet you that place packs in them and they're pretty tight. So, yeah, the 400 number would just seem pretty close.
Yeah. Tammy said that was Tim's third 410 win this year at Huset's. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody else made a comment saying that he doesn't have a whole lot of experience on half miles. That's true to a point.
That is true.
You know, he's ran I-80s, ran Port Royal, he's ran now Knoxville.
Did he run I-80 as a 360?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Then he's ran a half mile track up in Montana. He won at earlier this year. He ran Lakeside. So he ran Devil's Bowl too. So there's not
a ton of
experience. But he's made multiple laps around him. But yeah, you go to Knoxville, and that I've said it a thousand times. It's crazy about that place.
It's different. Yeah, it's just different than any place else.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do is look at Macri not making the A-Main Saturday night. That tells you plenty right there. That guy is one of the hottest drivers in the country, right? Right. Where did Brent Marks end up?
Brent ran about mid-pack.
Did he? Yeah.
I'm not 100. It was on the back half, top 10, top 15 range. It wasn't super impressive. Not like he was when he ran with the Outlaws here earlier this year, unless he just... You know, you go there to win, so I'm not going to say he went up there and was just trying to get through the night and get to the Nationals, which probably isn't the case. Just, you know.
Well, you don't want to tear your stuff up.
Either. No. Right. You can be like Aaron Reitzel.
Marks was eighth.
Oh, well, that was way off then. I remember looking at the ticker top of the screen. So glad to have one. It's nice looking at it. And I thought I saw him maybe back there a little farther. Maybe that was earlier in the race when I saw that. But, yeah, I mean, you could be like Aaron Reitzel right now and have a really good, you know, 360 program going and bring your 410 out and had a decent run and just destroy it. for the Nationals. I mean,
you don't want to do that.
No, Aaron's been hard on his 410 stuff this year. That's within a month. I mean, he's wiped out three cars. That's tough.
Yeah.
Especially when you got this time coming around, you want to make sure you have the best of the best, and it's in pristine and the best condition it can be in.
Austin, tonight, North Wilkesboro starts. Is it kickoff tonight?
It's just a test and tune tonight.
Test and tune
tonight. I believe it's racing tomorrow. It looks like it's going to be the Touring Modifieds, Hornets, and like a street stock class is what I...
Practice tonight?
Three-hour practice from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock Midwest time.
Are you looking forward to any of this?
Time. Yeah, I kind of forgot that. You know, it starts on... in the back of your mind, you know it's a whole month of August is pavement racing, and... Yeah, I woke up today and I saw a post on Facebook that their, teams are lined up waiting to get in. I'm like, man, is it already August? And, it sure is. And I can't wait. I've seen some pictures of the facility here for the last 2-3 days of overhead shots and some other things like that. It's crazy what Barry Braun and the Race XR team has done to revive that place and get it back to what. It's not back what it used to be, but it's still back in the functioning mode, and I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to the Featherlight Modifieds.
Yeah,
they're not Featherlight anymore.
No, it's the Whelen Modified Tour.
Whelen, and then, that's how old I am.
Featherlight. I know Junior's going to run a late model stock race here, probably a week or two from now. So it's
at Wilkesboro.
At Wilkesboro, yes.
Really?
And then I know there's a handful of retired Cup guys running with the Modified Series, and then. A handful of guys coming back to run the late model stock series and maybe some supers. So
I just couldn't resist.
No, I mean it's the last race that we'll have on the old pavement.
Right.
October or actually in September, the pavement comes up, the dirt under the surface gets turned into a dirt track, and October is dirt racing, and November 1st it's going to be torn down and
dirt track.
I don't know what all is going to be torn down, but it's going to be refurbished and made into a state-of-the-art racing facility. It's a pavement track in 2023.
Yeah. Well, I got a feeling that they're going to have a little problem with all the sealer that's on that racetrack. Do you see how much sealer's on that track where they've filled up all the cracks around that place? Have you seen that?
There's quite a bit.
There is a lot on there.
I can't believe that the pavement is in as good as a condition that it's actually in. It sat, dormant for many years, 10 years, I think, because when they ran the last race in 2010, actually longer than that, 12 years now. And, it's just a kind of a hats off to the grounds crew to keep it in somewhat functioning condition.
You know, we didn't mention Brandon Shepherd wins $100,000 at Fairbury this weekend with World of Outlaw Late Models. Did you see that?
I seen where he won. That's really not a surprise. He's been pretty good at Fairbury here the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And when the money comes up on the line, you can never count on Shepherd.
Our boy Mike Marler, second place.
No, 21 top fives.
He's just steady money, isn't he?
I bet you that probably paid $50,000.
Second place did probably.
If it pays $100,000, I would assume second would probably pay $50, $25, $10, and on that's how I would break it down. I didn't see any posts on how much he made, but I bet you he made probably $50,000 for running second.
Wow, pretty good race there for that was Shepherd's Prairie Dirt Classic win. That's his 80th World of Outlaw Chase Late Model victory. 80, that's pretty damn
good. Pretty big.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in to the show. I want to. Thank everybody who tunes in each and every day. You know who you are. We really appreciate it. We will be doing it all over again tomorrow. I'm not sure who the guest is going to be on tomorrow, but we'll find somebody. But it's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. It's mostly motorsports. For Austin O'Neill, for my partner Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying we'll see you tomorrow right here on RBN, the Racing Voice Broadcasting Network.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.